The passage from James elaborates on Jesus' very simple instruction, do not judge. James says that faith that coasts along without examination of how we judge others on things such as how much money and access to resources we have is a very small faith. Faith that coasts along without examining our partiality misses the mark. And one truth is that we can't ascertain a person's character by social economic status, and yet, of course, we do to varying degrees every day with regularity. And James is saying our faith is not big enough or developed enough, or we haven't searched ourselves enough to overcome these judgments and this partiality. James sets the question about how we treat the rich and poor, those with overflowing resources and those without enough resources. He sets a question in the context of worship in our assemblies. And so the question becomes one of hospitality and welcome, as well as social economic status. The hospitality question is, in James, is what captured my attention this week in relationship to the refugee crisis in the world. Many immigrants in Europe want to go to Germany, one of the most economically stable countries in Europe. This is, of course, very, very interesting for many reasons of the 20th century. I think it's really important. Germany is often cited for their failure in the Third Reich and in the Holocaust. We often don't look at the end of World War I when countries in Europe wanted to punish Germany. And so there was no, in whatever the treaty that was in 1917, maybe somebody can remember the name of that, that Germany was given really no reparations, no way to rebuild. And so fear and social and political instability and the lack of a narrative which encouraged love across religious and cultural differences developed into the horror of Hitler's rule under the Third Reich and the horrors that that brought to the world. More recently, Germany was a site of decades-long tension with guest workers of Turkish origin from the 50s to the present, and has been labeled by some uncaring toward other countries in Europe with less prosperity. The ethics surrounding refugees and immigration may have been perceived by all of us in the United States in the last decades as a national issue, but now, of course, it is global, as few regions of the world are not touched by this issue. Maybe you, too, have read a lot over the last 20 years about immigration. I certainly have, because I want to understand what are the issues that seem to be constantly swept under the rug, the political rug. A few years ago, I was surprised in my reading to come across an article advocating open borders, international open borders. The article is from Australia. This idea would mean that immigration and movement across international borders would be left to individual choice. I have heard such ideas promoted in the US too. And this idea strikes me as quite impossible with the current world made up of nation states, which do not seem to, they don't seem to me to have, we don't have enough cooperation to make this possible. But I also wanted to think things through before abandoning this idea. This idea of open borders challenges our notions of the current nation state. Some believe the nation state sort of inadvertently came into being with discoveries of capitalism and mercantilism and the need to regulate economies. Others thought that our ability to navigate geographically and make maps defining national boundaries helped bring the nation state into existence. And others, the nation state existed before. People had a sense of identity of a nation before they became a state. Some people believe the nation state came into being with mandated education, mass literacy, and mass media. In any case, I was just sort of probing, what is it that got us into this current place where we are, where we can't seem to deal effectively with immigration? For better or worse, creating nation states meant distinguishing us and them, those inside our borders and those outside. The nation state has, I think we can all agree, met needs for protection, care, distribution of resources, working through conflict. Another intention in creating nation states was to create a system of currency. Think of Hamilton. Anybody seen Hamilton? That's a prominent theme in the beginning of that musical. And developing and regulating a currency was really important to founding our country. Some of the intention of nation states was to regulate economies and establish paths for health, learning, providing food, keeping disease and ignorance and famine at a distance. These are goods. It's hard for me to imagine that open borders could do this in our current world. The idea of open borders would seem to depend on a unified global commerce and ethics. And now I'm way out of my league. It does seem obvious, however, to say that making global commerce happen without nation states making agreements and treaties, one would need some kind of a global political system in which everyone is enfranchised to help create this border with open borders. I had the good fortune a number of years ago to become chaplain at Chautauqua. Does anybody know what Chautauqua is? Okay, Chautauqua is like summer camp in college for adults. And it was conceived of more than 100 years ago. And there are these, a camp in New York in the Finger Lakes region. It's gorgeous, it's on a lake. And you have a whole week of programming. It's for all ages, not just adults. But you have a whole week of programming. And I know there are locations, I think there's a location in Ohio, and I think there's a location in California. No, I think it's Oregon, actually. Okay. So there are themes every week. And they have chaplains of every denomination there, from conservative Judaism to liberal Judaism to United Methodist, Presbyterian, United Church of Christ. So Chautauqua is this wonderful place for exchange of ideas and social as well. During the week I was there, the focus was on the politics of Europe. One theory about political problems in Europe that I learned about is that there is a united currency for those countries, but there's also a movement for something called the United States of Europe, being decided or considered by the European Democracy Lab, where individual countries and their cultures would stand as states with one governing body, and all people would be equally enfranchised. Of course, looking at Brexit and other movements, it seems like this is unlikely to become reality anytime soon. Nonetheless, I just enjoyed exploring this idea because I think we need new systems of thinking, political, social, to deal with the immigration crisis. So I'm just asking us all to stretch our thinking a little bit. If we don't have open borders, how do sovereign nations regulate borders? Immigration, who enters, who leaves? How do we distribute resources? As a response to Jesus and James, calling us to care for everyone without partiality. It seems we have been talking about this in the United States since my entire adulthood. There were chances in the 1990s for a more humane immigration system, but we know that evaporated. In 2016, candidate Trump advocated that all visitors, refugees, asylum seekers from other countries to the U.S. be tracked with a GPS technique, which he didn't spell out, but which he likened to tracking packages. UPS, FedEx, United Postal Service. This is so Orwellian, it's so frightening for me to even think about that, and I'm guessing it is for you too. But it's important to remember, and more importantly, to create constructive immigration programs, because immigration promises to become a hugely important topic in the next year. The predicament is profoundly sad to me because I believe we already have the economic models, renewable energy sources, and diplomacy that can indeed support us sharing resources, not only nationally, but internationally. In addition to James, there are, of course, other directives in the Bible. Like so many ethical issues of the 21st century, biblical teachings and stories are sometimes relevant and some not. Let's hear about a couple more. We read about hospitality, the directive to open our homes to travelers. And of course, in the parts of the Middle East, 2,000 years ago, it was a response to the harsh desert existence where it was a difference between life and death. No Super 8s or Airbnbs. This kind of directive dealt with life and death and was about opening one's home for a traveler going to Jerusalem. I'm guessing most of us would not open our homes at 10 p.m. to somebody who knocked on our door. And I want to acknowledge this is meeting needs for safety and protection. But our current situation is also about life and death. We read about people dying every day, fleeing their country. Instead, we often give money to PADS and BEDS programs and other shelters where safety and accountability can be part of the equation. But currently, our shelters are out of room. Mayor Johnson said in the last few weeks that Chicago is at a breaking point with no more room in shelters, let alone police stations. And I just read the other day he's suggesting temporary tent shelters, temporary tent cities. The Bible also gives us the story of the Good Samaritan, which is about shelter and medical care. And certainly, in our culture, the story has inspired us to create hospitals and other medical centers for people. And those not-for-profit medical centers are indeed required to offer a certain extent of service for which they're not compensated. There are laws in the Hebrew Bible that direct farmers to leave their fields for people to glean, a recognition that food is one of our primary basic needs. We have to provide needs for all. So the Bible shows us different kinds of hospitality, but the lessons are not always easily translated for us today. Many people, from Jim Walters at the London School of Economics to activist Greta Thunberg, point out that the rich countries of the world have contributed to global warming the most, which is one of the drivers for so much immigration today. We have resources and control of our resources, and ethically we must welcome refugees, immigrants, asylum seekers to be peacemakers and help heal the wounds that we have helped create in the world. It's truly amazing to me that Germany has become a leader in the conversation about international hospitality. And I'm focusing on Germany because when I was at Chautauqua, there were two women in the government in Germany who were hugely inspirational to me and in command of 20th century politics. Germany created a system for guest workers from Turkey, and which continues to this day and which has been emulated by other European countries. In 2015, they took in over 1 million refugees. This number has diminished in recent years as the program was intended to meet the need for workers, but also as a humane program. This plan is far from perfect, but it's evolved, and many Turkish immigrants and their families today have become citizens of Germany. I remember the news some years ago about Germany's decision under Angela Merkel to accept these refugees. And did anybody else see on our news images of people at train stations, Germans, with a huge welcome to all the immigrants who were coming in, providing and steering them toward housing and medical support? I dream of such a thing in our country, where we have open arms. I feel happy to have been involved with the interfaith program in Chicago called Refugee One. Has Three Crosses ever participated in Refugee One? Okay, yes. Immigrants receive incredible support through that program. And very often, decades-long friendships happen. Interfaith, it's an interfaith organization, and so members of the faith organizations often meet these immigrants at the airport. I did that once with my son. It was a beautiful experience. So these friendships sometimes last decades. Immigrants receive instruction in English, housing assistance for a number of months, connecting to medical and educational programs. They offer vocational training and job placement. And when I think of that program, I think we need that program times about a million worldwide. Just as I was finishing this sermon and feeling, what have I said? What have I said other than relaying, grieving where we are? Just as I was finishing the sermon, my son called. Alex, my son, is in his first internship, a five-month job after finishing his master's program. This is how he began. He said, "This morning when I left for work, I saw the battery light had come on my car. Oh, my first thought was, this cannot end well. This cannot have a good ending. These problems could escalate." Alex, in his calm, storytelling voice, continued, "I'd gotten a recommendation from a reputable garage at work, and I was on my way to there from work." And I was sort of eyebrows raised because he'd taken our advice to get a recommendation for a garage. So I was pleased, happy about that, holding my breath still. And he continued, "I was about a quarter mile from the garage on a pretty busy street, six lanes, when my car died." He said, "Within less than a minute, a Toyota Corolla stopped to help. Five Spanish-speaking members of a family, he believed, with very little English, stopped and pushed his car to the side of the road." It brings tears to my eyes. The ending continues to inspire. The garage mechanic towed the car and then, without asking for payment, drove Alex home some distance away. I prayed for this. When my husband and I were settling his aunt's estate, there was a man who was very difficult to work with, that we had to work with. And my prayer for him was that something like this would happen in his life, that somebody who did not look like him would come to his aid. So I don't know if that ever happened, but I certainly went to prayer in that way. My prayer is that we examine ourselves so that we can continue to identify and acknowledge the stereotypes we hold in whatever form they take, and begin to see the humanity in every person, as James asks us to do. And secondly, may we pledge to look at these large, large issues and the suffering in the world, not in little sound bites, as is so easy, but with integrity, examining the complexity with logic and care, and without demonizing those who suffer, nor each other, nor our adversaries. That is faith that works. Amen.